always chirping at my men, the girls. We don't want to damage that perfect face. Yet. He ground his cigar into the orange slice. She needs to be broken like a wild horse. I've been there, Evans said, striking a sympathetic tone. I've guarded trust fund girls and the daughters of sheikhs. There's an art to it, keeping them in line. No hassles, no friction. There's a way of making them understand, so they don't behave poorly. Montesco studied him, reptilian eyes flat and unblinking. For a moment, Evan thought he'd pushed too far too quickly. Then El Moreno waved his cigar. Let's see how good you are, X, he said. Why don't you go get that puta in line? Where is she? He stabbed the glowing tip of the cigar at the corner bedroom on the second floor and said, take him. Darling boy rose. Evan followed him into the house. Even the back of his neck was inked, blue-black flesh rippling like snakeskin. They wound their way up the metal stairs. Darling boy stopped on the landing, waiting as Evan ascended to the second floor, keeping uncomfortably close. Evan's face drew level with his shoes, his knees, crotch, chest, chin. Then they were standing nose to nose. I've been with him 17 years, darling boy said. Then you come along. Golden boy, straight teeth, pretty face, white. And he sits you at his side. Thank you, Evan said. Those sunken eyes blinked once, twice. For what? For calling me pretty. El Moreno is a great man. He has few blind spots. But you should know. Darling boy dug the tip of his pointer finger into Evan's chest. That I don't. He turned and led Evan down the narrow hall. They moved through a pinned open metal door, and then he gestured to the closed door at the end and faded back toward the stairs. Thumbing through his phone, Jovencito sat outside the room on a chair tilted back so his shoulders rested against the wall. He didn't bother to look up as Evan approached. El Moreno wants me to take next shift, Evan said. See if I can talk some sense into her. Jovencito jogged forward, the front legs of the chair clicking against the tile. Pocketing his phone, he stood. Don't touch the merchandise. That handsome grin. Tempting as it may be. He walked past Evan, brushing his shoulder. Pulling out his room zone, Evan called up a white noise generating app tuned at specific frequencies to mask voices from being overheard or captured by covert surveillance. He put the phone away and then stood with his hand on the doorknob, waiting for the sound of Jovencito's footsteps to recede downstairs. A long and winding road had led to this door. There were no commandments for this, no rules or touchstones to guide him in managing whatever lay in the room behind. He took a breath, eased it out, twisted the knob silently. She was there, lying atop the covers on the bed, facing away. A tumble of thick black hair strewn across the comforter, head dipped forward, neck bent, a loose approximation of a fetal position. He entered loudly enough for her to hear his movement and shut the door behind him. Angelina, he said softly. She turned, one arm stretching open so she could view him in a half-twist across her body. She was so beautiful that it was unsettling to look at her directly, as if he were seeing something he wasn't meant to see. For a moment he felt discomposed, voyeuristic. Then he refocused. Clearing the haze of the first impression, seeing her as a girl a few years older than Joey. Who are you? She asked. I'm an acquaintance of your father's, he said in a low voice, inching forward. I'm here to rescue you.
Rescue me?
She shifted further onto her back, the soft bump of her pregnant belly rising into view.
I don't want to be rescued, she said. I ran away.
Chapter 36, The Meaning of Regret. For the first time in memory, Evan found himself shell-shocked. He had a moment of pure denial, nearly sufficient to convince his brain that he'd misheard her. The first fucking commandment. He thought about the pictures from her 18th birthday party, how she'd worn a shawl so its ends dangled over her stomach, just enough to distract from the swell beneath. Angelina pushed herself up against the plush-upholstered headboard, arms protectively crossed over her rounded belly. "My father sent you?" Evan still couldn't find words. "What's your name?" Her voice was deep, not husky and not unfeminine either, but edged with soulful throatiness. "Call me X." Her face was flushed, forehead twisted with consternation. "Arnulfo, is he okay?"
"Who?"
"Arnulfo. He was catering the party. My birthday party. They hit him in the face with the butt of a gun. So much blood. They split his lip. They weren't supposed to hurt anyone. Is he okay?" "And Hortensia, my God. She must have been terrified."
Evan finally caught up to himself.
"The caterer? A split lip? Do you have any idea what you've done? What I've done? I didn't have a choice. My papa, he would have killed me. And worse."
Tears sprang to her eyes instantly, glassing them over but refusing to fall.
"It would have broken him." The pieces slid into place with sudden, horrifying clarity.
"Raimundo,"
Evan said. She looked at him, trauma writ large upon her face. Even in grief, she was luminescent, lit from within. Impossibly wide eyes, impossibly long lashes.
"Si Watanejo,"
Evan said.
"Both of your families happen to vacation there every year during Semana Santa."
He ran his fingers through his hair, a rare show of aggravation.
"Star-crossed lovers playing games. Don't belittle us. You have no idea what Raimundo's been through. You have no idea how strong he is.
So what's your plan? Let your parents believe you're dead? Live out your days here under lock and key? Hope not to get fed to the lions?"
At this, her lip trembled, but she bit down on it. "This wasn't the plan. This isn't our future. Raimundo doesn't want this any more than I do. We're gonna get out of here, and we're gonna start over, and we're gonna..."
"You're not gonna anything, Angelina.
El Moreno is a psychopath. This isn't a game. This isn't a movie. They will kill you in the most painful way possible. Feed you to the lions. Cut your eyelids off. Carve your face right off your head. You're on his land, where he tortures and kills people. Your unborn baby is here with these men."
"I didn't know what to do."
She was refusing to cry, her hands clenched into fists, emotion coming up beneath her smooth skin, inflaming the rims of her eyes and nostrils.
"We didn't know what to do. People have died," Evan said. "Sorry. I'm sorry."
She pressed her knuckles to her mouth.
"We didn't think it would go like this. I'm sorry. Raimundo thought it would be safe here. That his father would be proud to have a grandbaby. That he would let us leave and start a life. It didn't work out that way. We're not free here.
He keeps me watched in here. Won't let me see a doctor. Won't let Raimundo see me when he wants.
But I couldn't have stayed at home either."
Her tone sharpened, and she kept on vehemently, as if Evan were arguing with her. "It was impossible there, too. Me, the only Urrea child, Aragon's daughter, pregnant by a León.
There were no options. I know who my father is. I know what he's capable of."
"You think he would hurt you?"
"Not me," she said. Raimundo. My dad would have gone to war.
He has gone to war.
You don't understand. You don't know what it's like. I had nowhere to go. They put you on a pedestal, and any way you step, you fall off.
What? Who did?
I don't know. Everyone.
The whole town. My father.
You can't move.
It's like... Her hand circled helplessly. They want you to be a portrait.
But it's always their painting, you know. And for once...
She sucked in a wet breath.
I wanted to be the painter. My own painter.
Now, finally, she was sobbing.
There's so much pressure. What they think, what they want, how they'll act if you don't do the right thing in their eyes. You're exhausting. You're all so exhausting.
I'm not here to exhaust you. I'm here to help you.
Right. You're different.
She tried for sarcastic, but only came off heartbroken, despairing.
I just want to be left alone. I just want to be alone with Raimundo and the baby.
Why can't we just... You can't do this right now, Evan cut in. Understand me? He shot a glance at the door. You cannot fall apart.
I know. Sorry. I'm sorry.
She tilted her skull back to thunk against the headboard. A moment ago she'd been crying freely, but already she was reining it in, getting herself under control.
When I was first here, I used to pinch myself, like to wake up from a bad dream.
She showed him the inside of her arm, the tender skin bruised yellow and purple.
But then I stopped. Easier to just be numb.
Be whatever you need to be right now, Evan said. But in front of them, you have to obey me completely.
Wow.
She glowered at him, face flushed and miserable.
I knew it. You're not different. You're just like everyone else.
If you listen to me, there's a chance Montesco will let me guard you. If you don't, you get darling boy. You choose. She pulled in another breath, locked it between clenched teeth.
Speechless. Defeated.
He sat on the edge of the bed, took her bare arms in his grip, held her gaze, hoping she would match her breathing to his to slow it down.
I will figure out how to protect you.
How?
I don't know. I don't even know what you want.
Behind them, the door banged open and she bolted upright, startled. Jovencito entered, whistling a high, fluttering tune. Evan kept his grip on Angelina's arms, but now made it look menacing, switching modes on a dime. New posture, new bearing, new expression. He stared straight through her eyes, spoke in a cold, hard voice she recoiled from.
Fuck with me again, and I will teach you the meaning of regret.
She jerked her head in a terrified nod.
Don't damage the goods, Jovencito said. Romeo will be upset, which means his father will be angry.
No need to damage her, Evan said, sliding off the bed.
Not anymore.
We've reached an understanding.
Isn't that right, girl?
She looked at him, still breathing hard, nostrils flaring. Behind her long eyelashes, her gaze was wounded, as bruised as the dappled skin of her forearm.
She lowered her eyes, gave a meek nod.
Evan started out, Jovencito signaling his approval, wearing an impressed frown. Clearing the doorway, Evan couldn't bring himself to turn around and see the wreckage on Angelina's face.
You continue to surprise Caballo Oscuro, Jovencito said. Who knows what else you're capable of?
Evan wondered the same thing. The bedroom suite was the picture of luxury. Marble surfaces, granite soaking tub, high thread count sheets. Somehow before this week, Evan had managed not once to play house guest to a criminal mastermind. But that drought had ended with a twofer. The room looked to have been done by an upscale designer. Generic art on the walls, a squat floor vase sprouting curling willow branches, floating shelves filled with actual books, though they were coverless, organized by color, and half were upside down. Montesco could buy everything in the world but class. Freshly showered, Evan crossed the room, bare feet sinking into the plush carpet, and stared at the array of decorative literature. An urge rose in his chest to alphabetize them. He quashed it. At the foot of the sleigh bed, a rolling suitcase rested atop a luggage rack, hard-shelled lid raised to display the brick of $100 bills he'd requested. That certainly beat a chocolate on the pillow. To the memory foam mattress, lying down, a single deep inhalation that he drew up from the soles of his feet. Exhale. Exhaustion descended over him. A secret love affair, a pregnant girl, a faked kidnapping, one family destroyed, the other dangerous beyond compare. And the nowhere man tangled up in the middle with a skill set utterly unsuited to addressing a conflict like this. This was the stuff of families, disappointment and passion, resentment and heartbreak, dashed dreams and failed hopes, intimacy. This wasn't his arena. What had Mia told him? You fit in, sure, but that's different from belonging. He thought of her freckles, the weight of her head in the crook of his elbow, his fingertips at her neck, checking for a pulse. He tapped her number into the roam zone, sent her a text. How did it go with the neurologist? A pause. Now she was typing, the three dots taking their time. Finally, can you talk? He felt the weight of the question in his chest. He texted, no. A moment after the fact, it occurred to him how she might take that, so he added, out of country for work. No privacy. When are you back? I don't know. The screen was blank. Still blank. Then, dot, dot, dot. He waited, impatiently. I need a consult with a neurosurgeon now. Evan stared at the phone. Tiny digital words rendered from ones and zeros. Just eight of them. But they packed an awful lot of punch. Day after tomorrow, 10 a.m., she texted. The doctors were in a hurry. Time-sensitive matters were rarely ideal when it came to neurosurgeons. He typed, fuck. Yeah, fuck. Another bubble popped up. Good night, Mr. Danger. Good night. He stared at his phone. The urge to get home to Mia was as alien as any he'd ever felt. The oval tray ceiling was rimmed with ornate molding and embedded lighting, the drop-down borders in a soothing off-white to accent the scene painted above. Wispy clouds across a cerulean sky, Michelangelo's dome with the day players removed. It was empty, forlorn, a beautiful mural of heavenly nothingness. Everything beneath this roof was grand and showy, dangerous and cold. So different from Aragon and Belicia's home. Eden felt impossibly remote. Evan wondered what the hell he'd gotten himself into, and how he would possibly get out. He thought about how, when he needed to execute a mission, he flattened the world into two dimensions. But how people like Joey, Mia, and Peter demanded three. This mess, with Angelina and Raimundo, Aragon and Belicia, would require him to occupy both perspectives at the same time. Something he'd never attempted. Not a safe operational space. All he knew was that he knew nothing. and that this nothing was deeper and blacker than the nothing he thought he'd known before. It was time to shut down. He told himself to go to sleep, and he listened. Chapter 37. Fetch the Lion. El Moreno showed his face a bit past noon, and from the look of it, he needed longer yet to sleep off what he'd been trying to sleep off. As he stepped out onto the back patio to where Evan sat beneath the pergola, his terry bathrobe flapped extravagantly, showing off maroon briefs, hairy legs, and ostrich skin cowboy boots. A cigar hung crookedly from his mouth, adhered to his bottom lip, free of the clamp of his upper jaw. It wobbled as he spoke. Caballo Oscuro. Enjoying the view. His face held pressure lines from whatever he'd fallen asleep on. A pillow, a swirl of sheets, the ergonomic front grip of an MP7. Evan had spent the morning clocking Montesco's men, watching the guard station switches, noting which vehicles rolled through the front gate and how often. The side of the house provided a superb vantage to the workings of the estate. Since his arrival, Evan had kept a running tally of Montesco's men. On top of the two sicarios, his count had reached 41. Topless girls in string bikini bottoms lounged on poolside boulders or splash slid into the water like aquarium turtles. A half dozen workers were up the palm trees with razor-toothed saws, thinning out the crowns. Jovencita was guarding Angelina's room, and darling boy had positioned himself at a downstairs window, his ugly face aimed at Evan. Raimundo scurried out of the house. It was clear he'd been waiting nervously for his father to make an appearance. Papa, I'd like to see my girlfriend. Montesco took his time with the cigar, savoring a puff. Your girlfriend? Nothing here is yours, hijo. Everything here is ours. Father and son is the most important relationship on this planet. For years, the Montesco name meant nothing. Until me. Now, it is all that matters. He paced in showy fashion, waving his cigar, walking beneath the hum of the workers overhead. You will inherit everything. All that is mine will be yours. Which means that all that is yours is mine. Do you understand? Raimundo's head was tilted down, but the muscles of his neck had tightened, as if he were girding himself, and Evan saw something rising in the young man he had not seen before. What if I don't want that? Raimundo's voice trembled, but there was a thread of steel in it. The dark man's face literally darkened, the inner blackness pushed to the surface like toxins fighting their way out. His stare held a cold enmity that Evan had seen on only a few occasions in the entirety of his time as Orphan X. It verged on inhuman, tainted with something preternatural, a kind of evil summoned up, channeled from another place. Raimundo literally withered before his father's glare. When Montesco spoke, his voice held an uncharacteristic calm. I will line up 50 of my best men and rape her until she falls to pieces. Until her body comes apart. Raimundo was breathless. You wouldn't do that. Even you. Why not? My life's work. My sweat and blood clawing myself up out of the gutter an inch at a time. It's in you, my son. Montesco's tone was gentle, even loving, but the sadistic gleam had not left his eyes. You want to walk away from everything I've built? Everything I am? When I'm gone, you will turn my legacy into dust, destroy me. You'd exterminate my name, the name of my father. If you're willing to do that to me, don't question what I will do to her. And now he leaned closer, his shadow falling across his son's face. What will be left?
If you betray all that I've done, all that I am, what will remain of me?
What if I'm something better? Raimundo looked stunned that the words had escaped him. Immediately his posture changed, crumpling inward.
Papa, forgive me. I didn't mean...
Montesca backhanded him, knocking him to the ground, then started kicking him in the ribs, face contorted with rage. His hair tumbled across his eyes, and for a moment it seemed like he'd unleashed something that could never be contained, that he would literally kick his son to death. As Montesca wound up once more, Evan tensed to intervene. But before he could, a cry came from overhead. A dead palm frond fell weightily from the sky, striking Montesco at the back of his neck. He staggered and dropped his cigar, embers cascading along the concrete. Knocked down onto a knee, hair thrown forward across his face, his maroon ass hanging out of the bathrobe. It was as though someone had pressed pause on the world. Girls frozen in the grotto, mouths ajar. Darling boy on his feet inside, one hand pressed to the windowpane. The guards standing rigidly, as if afraid to breathe. Montesco rose, dusted off his knee, spit a bit of tobacco from his tongue. There was a hum coming off him, a low vibration of rage. That too wide mouth quivered. The eyes, offset by that broad nose, had an animal intensity, fire and wounded pride. It was as though he'd been punctured, unveiled as a mere human who could get struck on the head and knocked down like anyone else. Time and time again, Evan had learned that nothing in the world was more dangerous than a weak man who felt humiliated. The worker was rappelling down the trunk of the palm tree, pulley rope literally smoking in his hands. He hit the ground unevenly, stumbling over to the dark man and throwing himself prostrate on the concrete. An older man, quite short, long-sleeved shirt drenched with sweat, missing his front teeth. His name patch read, Venustiano.
Perdóname, jefe, perdóname.
Venustiano was too scared to sob, but his chest heaved as though he were. Raimundo crawled away, finding his feet, keeping his distance from his father and the newest distraction. Darling boy had emerged from the house. He stood across the pool, arms loose at his sides. Montesco looked not at the tree trimmer, but at darling boy. He swept his sweat-slick locks back over his head, restoring himself to his full height.
"Fetch the lion," he said.
Chapter 38. What It Means to Be Ruthless. Time seemed to stand still for another few minutes, Venustiano sobbing quietly at Montesco's feet, while Montesco smoked his cigar, the breeze riffling his hair. Raimundo reached a trembling hand to the patio chair and lowered himself into it. Evan sat as well, his mind spinning. He had no weapon, armed guards every which way. If he tried to save the tree trimmer, he'd be outed and likely killed, which meant Angelina would not be saved. The seventh commandment decreed one mission at a time, which was all well and good until it collided with the tenth commandment. Never let an innocent die. Now six of Montesco's men were wheeling an enormous contraption across the park-like lawn beyond the pool. It was a massive cage, not unlike two soccer goals set mouth-to-mouth with a dividing wall rigged to a handle. Evan had sworn to help Angelina. He'd earned the trust of her father and the hope of her mother, and trust and hope were not responsibilities he could jettison lightly. Now a roar vibrated the bones in Evan's spine. The lion ambled into sight at the back of the house, the handler appearing a moment later, 5 feet back, Trank rifle in hand. The lion swung his mighty head to glower at them across the backyard. The handler shouted a command, and the lion lumbered forward into the massive cage. The door slid shut behind him. Salivating profusely, he stared hungrily over at El Moreno. Montesco prodded Venustiano with the sharp toe of his cowboy boot.
Go.
The old man was sobbing. Go! One of the guards came over, the skinny guy with protruding teeth whom the others called Nacho. He grabbed the tree trimmer by the arms and hauled him across the lawn to the cage. He was boneless, legs dragging limply behind him. Nacho threw him in the back of the cage. Only the partition separated him from the lion. Montesco smiled at Evan and Raimundo. Come, let's have some fun. They walked over, Raimundo trailing like a beaten dog, wiping blood from his nose and clutching his ribs. Darling Boy joined them along with a dozen of the guards. The women hoisted themselves out of the pool, sitting on the edge, shivering and watching. The lion pranced and roared, ropes of drool dangling from his jowls. He swatted the metal partition with a paw, the impact like a thunderclap. Venustiano balled himself up in the far corner, knees to chin, head lowered, shoulders shaking. Something drew Evan's focus to the house. Angelina at her window, staring down, hand clasped over her mouth, in the blush of youth, pregnant, stunning. The toothless man, skin leathered from a lifetime of hard work, not much tread left on the tires. Her whole life in front of her, his mostly in the rear view. Evan felt Darling Boy's sunken eyes picking across his face, watching him distrustfully, waiting for a tell. Montesco stepped forward, gripped the handle. Venustiano was muttering the Lord's Prayer in Spanish, "En la tierra como en el cielo," and the breeze carried the stink of his panic sweat and the lion's musk, nearly overpowering at this proximity. Darling Boy's unremitting stare, Angelina watching from afar, feral heat radiating off the lion, guards encircling the cage, MP7s at the ready, the seventh commandment and the tenth at war inside Evan's chest. Veins stood out in Montesco's arm. He tensed, ready to throw the handle and lift the partition. Venustiano's words blurring together.
Y perdónanos nuestras deudas.
The creak of the ratchet engaging, the partition shuddering and lifting an inch off the ground, now a foot, the lion shoving his snout eagerly at the gap. Wait, Evan said. Montesco's head snapped over to him. Darling Boy's lips peeled back from his cracked yellow teeth in something darker than a smile, something like lustful anticipation. Montesco released the handle, and the partition slammed back down. Evan's mind churned for any plausible explanation. The words left his mouth before he had time to consider them. Let me have this one. Montesco stepped aside, gestured for Evan to take his place at the handle. No, Evan said, not now. It needs to happen later. Darling Boy practically hummed with excitement. Why is that? Why does the Gabacho want us to delay? Yes, Montesco said, why the change of heart? Venustiano lifted his head from the ledge of his forearms. Darling Boy's pistol was drawn, aiming down the side of his leg. He stared at Evan through baggy eyes, pencil mustache rimming his bunched mouth. Raimundo doubled over, hands on his knees, breathing hard. The dark man sidled closer to Evan, brow twisted with confusion. I asked you a question. You told your boy he could learn from a man like me, Evan said. You're his father. You can't see him clearly, even his weakness. You smell it, but you don't understand the way in. Raimundo straightened up, legs trembling. Montesco scowled. He could take it as a challenge or an opportunity. Evan's breath burned in his chest. He had no idea which way it would go. Then Montesco gave a slight nod. He has to carry on your name, Evan pressed forward, which means he has to toughen up. You want him to do it, Montesco said. Evan shook his head. There's no lesson in impulsiveness. Anyone can be scared into doing something. He pointed at Venustiano.
Throw him in the chicken coop. Make him wait. Make him know it's coming. At the end of the month, before the women ship out, gather them all around and make them watch too. Day and night, he will think about what's waiting for him, marinating in the panic with those women. Every minute, every hour. Him and your son. Let Raimundo carry the burden of it. Let him learn what it means to be ruthless. The way you learned as a boy. The way I learned.
Raimundo was quivering, standing askew, one foot a half step back as if he feared toppling over. Darling boy eased forward to Montesco's side.
Jefe.
Montesco held up a hand, dismissing him without so much as a glance.
I like that, Caballo Oscuro.
A snap of his fingers.
Release him.
The guards opened the rear door and dragged Venustiano out.
Now,
Montesco said, cinching his sash and moving for the house.
Who's ready for lunch?
Chapter 39. Virulent Heat. The study was clouded with smoke from the cracked cigarettes. The lights were off, the only glow filtering through the aquarium water from above as the day bled into night. Montesco's energy filled the mansion, the entire estate. Even when he was out of sight, yanking mistresses from the pool, drinking in the kitchen, napping in his bedroom, a kind of virulent heat emanated from him, tangible through the walls. During the course of the day, Evan had made a few gentle insinuations about checking in on the girl, but Montesco either didn't register them or chose to ignore them, leaving Angelina in the hands of his sicarios. After banging around the mansion for most of the afternoon, disappearing at intervals to fuck and smoke, Montesco had summoned Evan to discuss his plans for expansion into Los Angeles. Evan spoke thoroughly and extensively about the criminal networks he'd become familiar with over the past years, where they laced together in cooperation, and where friction had reached a dangerous temperature. Once again, Montesco found surprising clarity when it came to business, poking at the picture Evan painted, searching out vulnerabilities and opportunities. Now he paused, toking deeply before grinding out the butt in a vintage cut crystal ashtray centered on his spotless leather blotter. In the penwell, ridiculously, rested a Mont Blanc fountain pen that had likely never been uncapped.
Your plan for Raimundo. It's smart.
Evan nodded.
Why do you think I keep that girl here? Why do you think I sent my men to take her from her cabron father? So I could have something. Something for my boy to care about. So he could learn.
Leverage.
That's right. A man like you understands.
Montesco steepled his hands, stared at Evan over his fingertips.
You should pray you never have a son as useless as mine. His weak heart. Coming here with that useless bitch.
Well, Evan said, maybe she's not entirely useless.
What do you mean?
The baby can carry on your name. Montesco pondered. If it's a boy.
Yes, if it's a boy.
And
what? Maybe Raimundo can become a man for this. When you became a father, I'd imagine that changed you.
Montesco leaned back in the oversized chair, dark eyes shining, that burnt orange lion peering out from his inner forearm.
It did. It altered the meaning of the world for me.
And it can for him.
If it's a boy.
Yes, if it's a boy. A male baby could teach Raimundo the awesomeness of this responsibility to carry on your name.
Unless... what?
The girl's health, Evan mused. She doesn't come from strong stock like Raimundo does. What if the baby is born all fucked up?
Do you know that it's good? Has she seen a doctor?
No.
I haven't let her leave the estate. She has food and space to rest and whatever else she wants. She doesn't need a fucking doctor.
Evan waited, watched Montesco's eyes flicker about the room, pondering.
She doesn't need a fucking doctor, he repeated. Right?
Evan shrugged.
How should I know? I don't know anything about babies.
Montesco inhaled deeply, nostrils flaring.
But you know how to keep girls like her in line.
That I do.
It's settled. You will take her.
Take her where?
The hospital in the city. I will have it all arranged. You'll have a convoy at your disposal.
I'm not a babysitter.
If I tell you you're a babysitter, Caballo Oscuro, then you're a fucking babysitter.
Evan let the words land on him, gritted his teeth, pretended to work something out inside himself.
Yes, Jefe, he said.
Tomorrow morning.
Montesco stood up.
Find out if there's a boy in her belly. If there's not, she'll have an abortion. And I'll put a boy in there myself.
Chapter 40. Who are you? They stood in the circular driveway just past the portico, the morning light blinding on the quartz stone, everyone lined up as if seeing off newlyweds. Montesco, Raimundo, and Angelina, both sicarios and a host of Montesco's strongmen, armed and awaiting instructions. Three dark SUVs idled before them, freshly cleaned, spotless windows, chauffeurs ready to go. In the gardens around them, Evan could hear rats scuttling. Shade fell across the makeshift jail of the chicken coop, the women inside barely visible. Just body parts glimpsed in stray bands of sunlight and the occasional flash of eyes. Humans chopped to pieces by light and darkness. The tree trimmer sat in the nearest cell, head lowered, the dim outline of a statue. The brass-plated skeleton key glinted in the sunlight, tauntingly out of reach, winking at the captives. The swans floated on the man-made river beside the driveway, oblivious to human suffering. Montesco opened the rear door of the middle vehicle for Evan, but Evan shook his head. I can drive myself. If there's an ambush, I want to be behind the wheel. Darling boy started forward, boots crunching rocks.
Jefe, why would you trust this gabacho? He could drive off with her and we'd never see her again.
Why would he do that?
Montesco said.
Who knows what Aragon Urrea would pay for her return?
Not as much as I can pay.
Montesco stared at darling boy and Evan in turn.
Remember that.
He snapped his fingers and called out, Raudel! The chauffeur emerged and tossed the keys to hit El Moreno's raised hand. Montesco dropped them into Evan's palm, but then seized Evan's fist, squeezing it firmly around the keys so metal pinched skin.
Bring her back to me.
Of course, Jefe.
Watch her closely. She is precious cargo.
At least Romeo here thinks so.
El Moreno grabbed his son's shoulder and jogged it roughly. Back to Evan.
My men will flank you on the drive. They'll be with you every step of the way.
I understand.
Evan leaned in, lowered his voice.
Watch your back while I'm gone.
Montesco's eye twitched, a first sign of paranoia yielding to stress.
Darling boy will help me flush out this snake.
Despite his quiet voice, a vein popped in his throat. He was feeling the strain.
Until then, I will keep an eye on everyone.
That was good. The more darling boy put the screws to Montesco's men to find them all, the more it would undermine Montesco's confidence and his men's faith in him. As Montesco started to turn, Evan gently grasped his arm.
Can I have my gun back?
Montesco grinned.
Not yet, Caballo Oscuro.
Only once he headed back to the house did Raimundo step forward and embrace Angelina. First ultrasound. She nodded into his shoulder.
I can't believe I'll see our baby.
I'm sorry I can't go with you,
he whispered into her hair, his words just loud enough for Evan to register. His voice trembled, and there were tears in his eyes.
But I know you'll do great. Be strong. Te amo. Te amo.
Evan held open the passenger door for Angelina, and she climbed in. As he shut it and turned, darling boy was standing right there.
I don't know what play you're running, Gaba,
he hissed through wrecked teeth,
but I will figure it out.
Evan sidestepped him and walked to the driver's door. Jovencita was waiting there, whistling. It was like a Sicario partner swap. Jovencito's smile was dazzling, as bright as the gleaming quartz.
I will be in the front car.
This is my number in case we hit any turbulence.
He turned a shitty Kyocera flip phone over, showed Evan the digits printed on a label adhered to the back.
Follow my lead, and we will have no problems.
Evan jerked his chin down in a nod. Darling boy had retreated to the mansion, offering a final glare from the front door before disappearing.
I'm not threatened by you like he is, Jovencito said. Why should I be? I'm younger, stronger, better looking. Haven't lost a step. So, you and I are good. As long as you remember I'm the best, we will be okay.
Affable tone, joking twinkle in his eye. He was playing an alpha game, but he wanted Evan's approval, too.
I remember when I was a young bull like you, Evan said. I wouldn't want to fight me at that age, either.
Jovencito said,
then let us hope we never have to.
Walking to the lead car, he twirled a cattle roundup finger over his head.
Let's go, Nacho.
As Nacho followed Jovencito dutifully to the front vehicle, Evan climbed into the middle SUV. Angelina started to say something, but he sliced a hand low over the console to quiet her until he got up the white noise-generating app on his roam zone. He set it in the cup holder, clenched the wheel, stared at Jovencito's SUV ahead, the rear vehicle in his side mirror. He summoned the third commandment, master your surroundings, and scanned the area with hyperfocus. A few storm drains were visible down the long driveway, rusty and weather-beaten save for one in the garden, which looked newly installed and well-maintained. Curious? A moment later they rolled forward, guards shoving open the front gate. They passed beneath the giant wooden archway, two of the three carved monkeys peering down at them. Limestone formations flashed by on either side, and then they were out onto the dirt road carved through towering walls of rock. He studied the power lines, noted the conditions of additional storm drains and sewer grates, gauged the topography and distance between turns, and plugged them all into the internal map he'd been building since he'd first arrived. They popped out into the low valley, dunes rolling past like waves of sand, wind sending grit skittering across the windshield. The truck thrummed along the ragged asphalt, the buildings of Guaridon visible in the distance, ugly rectangular slabs thrusting up like a row of tombstones. Angelina had remained silent, curled into herself, her face aimed out the window so all he could make out was one smooth cheek. The sight of her triggered a memory of a similar ride decades ago. 12-year-old Evan in the passenger seat of Jack Johns's dark sedan, his first trip out of the Baltimore projects. He'd been no more than a scrawny kid, dried blood crusted on his neck, wrists raw from handcuffs, the somber mood thick enough to choke on. And yet, there had been trust there, somehow, even before Jack had pulled out his white handkerchief and offered it for Evan to blot his bloodied cheek.
I saw what El Moreno tried to do to that poor man yesterday, she said. The tree trimmer guy. My lord.
She crossed herself.
What will happen to him?
Evan pictured the man balled up in terror, quivering against the lion's roars. I have 2 weeks to figure that out.
What happens in 2 weeks?
The chicken coop gets emptied.
the women sent to Vegas. The tree trimmer fed to the lion. The words seemed to move straight through her, those soulful brown eyes holding something deeper than hurt. Something like trauma incarnate. She blinked a few times, reining herself back in, and then blew out a breath.
Raimundo and I were allowed to see each other for a few minutes this morning, she said. I told him about you. I told him you were good.
Good is an overstatement, Evan said. Then added, sharply, can he be trusted? She looked at him and coughed out a laugh. Clearly, I think he can be trusted. I trusted him with my whole life. Your judgment hasn't exactly been exemplary. She turned away again, light playing across her face. You're all like that, ready to criticize, waiting to tell me every little thing I got wrong. You think this is a little thing? She clenched her hand and pressed it to her mouth. After a moment, Evan noticed her shoulders shake almost imperceptibly.
You're right, she said. Sorry. I'm sorry.
You apologize too much. She appraised him over her shoulder. That's what my father tells me. He's complicated, Evan said. But he's right about some things. The tires hammered over a pothole, causing them to bounce in their soft leather seats. The air conditioner blew cool and steady in their faces. Sealed inside a bubble of luxury, they moved through the wretched outskirts of the city. A dead body lay in a dirt lot, two dogs yanking at the pant leg. It felt like they were manning a submersible, moving through deep waters, scanning an underworld vista from a scientific remove. Angelina cupped her hand on the window, fingernails pressed to the glass. It's easy for me to think how awful it is to be me, that I'm the only one who could possibly feel this way. She took a breath, greedily, as if oxygen were hard to find. I mean, I'm the daughter of a sort of cartel leader who's also a wonderful father who's also cut people's throats, or had them cut. Was also the most decent man I know. And here I am with all this money and power and really none at all, feeling like I'm so different. But maybe that's how everybody feels. Maybe that's why we're all so lonely. Another breath, the words strangled, like she was forcing them out. And the way I look, it's like this curse I'm supposed to pretend is a blessing. I walk in a room and every set of eyes moves to me, and they all want something from me. It's like envy or lust or jealousy. They want to see me naked. They want to see me demeaned. They want to see me fill some role for them. Everyone I've ever met except Raimundo. A quick jerk of a nod. Have you ever really been seen? I don't mean the way we act every day. I mean like someone really gets you. The real part of you? Evan gripped the wheel. Didn't answer. The direction in which the conversation was headed was out of his comfort zone, into an overgrown tangle of softer emotions he could not afford now or ever. You fit in, sure, but that's different from belonging. He thought of Mia's bare shoulders, the warmth of her body curled into his, way in the distant past before seizures and neurosurgeons and tyrant rulers with lions primed for the taste of human flesh. Angelina seemed to take his silence as an answer.
Imagine what you'd be willing to do, she said, to have that, to be with the one person who ever really saw you.
He debated turning on the radio just to shut her up, but then remembered that this mission existed in that space between two and three dimensions, that in order to save her and be true to Aragon and Belicia, he might have to forge into that overgrown tangle, make room to endure it long enough to see a way out.
And I know,
Angelina added quickly. Boo-hoo, poor little rich girl. And yes, it would be worse if I were crippled or sick or begging for cigarette butts in Calcutta. But I hate it. I hate what I look like. Her gaze lifted to the small mirror in the visor, and she glared at her flawless face with tangible loathing. Everyone thinks I have all this value because of who I am. Who are you? She glanced at him, confused and rattled, and once again her beauty struck Evan like a revelation. It was unsettling, preternatural, a curse just as she'd said, testing her and everyone around her all the time. How many conversations have you had about me? She asked. Since you were busy getting fake kidnapped and being held hostage? Quite a few. Okay, fine. Those women in that chicken coop, how many conversations are being had about them? Or are they just lost, like all those girls in Ciudad Juarez, because they're not Aragon Urrea's daughter? And I mean, what? Would you be fighting so hard to save me if I weren't his daughter? Yes. Fine. If I had Down syndrome. Yes. If I were, I don't know, ugly. Would you really help me if I didn't look this way? Yes. Well, great, she said. That makes one of you. Two, Evan said. That makes two of us. If what you said about Raimundo is true. She was silent for a long time, and when she spoke, her voice was even throatier than normal. It is. Then don't forget that, what he's risking for you. It's not just you now. She nodded, tears spilling, and her hands moved to the swell of her belly. The lead SUV threw on its signal and banked right into the hospital's drop-off area. Evan pulled to the curb, sandwiched between the two SUVs filled with the Dark Man's acolytes. And, to be fair, he said, the tree trimmer did look a bit like you. She halted with her hand on the door handle, looking back at him with a surprised expression on her face. Then she smiled, a sad smile that quickly faded. I've never done this before, she said. Evan waited. Will you stay with me? In there? Evan hesitated, found his answer. Yes. She reached for his hand. Her skin was cool, impossibly soft. The skin of a child. Evan looked away, uncomfortable. She squeezed his hand once, took a sharp inhale, and climbed out. Chapter 41. A Little Pressure. A fussy man with a comb-over, the chief of staff met them in the lobby, shaking hands and offering praise for Raul Montesco that sounded strained. They filed past the ER, Evan, Angelina, Jovencito, and three armed men, bullying their way through the other departments. Doctors, nurses, and patients parted like the Red Sea. The remaining six henchmen waited back with the SUVs, an early alarm system for would-be attackers. Without his gun, Evan felt naked, and he clocked the passing surroundings from makeshift weapons, metal tray, syringe, clipboard. The chief of staff apologized for the state of the hospital. Lack of funds have made things difficult, he said in Spanish. We've had to make do with what we have, but we cleaned up our biggest room, one of the surgical suites, and made sure it has everything needed for an OBGYN examination of this importance. In the lead, Jovencito said nothing, his forearm ushering his jacket aside to show off the polished chrome Desert Eagle 44 at his waist. Angelina quickly stepped in to thank the doctor. I'm sorry for any inconvenience. He waved her off. No inconvenience at all. And this? A gesture to a white-coated woman, handsome and strong of jaw, is our finest obstetrician. He grinned. She did not. She didn't look a day over 30, and yet she wore a skunk streak of white in her thick black hair. The name tag on her scrubs read Dr. Ortega. She said, put your guns away. The men hesitated a moment and then complied, Nacho obeying last. Jovencito stepped forward to Ortega. The protocol for this visit will be Dr. Ortega extended a flat hand, placed her knuckles on the side of Jovencito's arm, and pressed him aside, clearing her sightline to Angelina and Evan.
"Are you the father?" Ortega asked.
"What?" Evan said.
"No. No, no, no."
Ortega cast a gaze past her alarmed chief of staff to Jovencito and the other henchmen. "All you men will wait outside." The chief of staff grinned nervously at Jovencito.
"Of course.
We're not giving any orders here."
"That's fine,"
Jovencito said, as if Ortega's demand were something he needed to approve. Ortega extended a hand to Angelina.
"I'm Maya," she said as they shook. "Let's get you taken care of."
She started to lead Angelina away, but Angelina turned back to Evan.
"Wait, can he come with me?"
Jovencito said, "Absolutely not."
Angelina blanched, shoulders folding inward.
She lifted her gaze to find Evans, a split second of eye contact. He tried to convey something to her without words. Sure enough, she straightened back up, squared her shoulders, looked to the doctor.
"I want him with me," she said, switching from Spanish.
"Then he will be with you," Ortega replied in perfect English. She reached past Jovencito, gripped Evan's arm, and steered her charges through the thick metal door into the surgical suite. As Angelina changed into a hospital gown, Evan turned his back. Ortega set her up on a padded table with a sheet of paper pulled over it. Stirrups were attached, but lowered to the sides. After a quick initial checkup, Ortega said, "You wait here. I need to search out an ultrasound cart. We had a slew of gunshot wounds roll into emergency an hour ago, so they pulled all our imaging gear to place central venous catheters and look for bleeding." She vanished behind the heavy door, which sealed with an airtight thud. The suite was cold, all sharp edges and surgical gear, a perfect rectangle. Angelina shivered beneath her gown.
"I'm cold."
Evan realized he was standing 5 feet away, told himself to move forward, and made his legs work. At her side now, staring down. Hair pulled back in a ponytail, not a trace of makeup. She looked exceedingly young, not a day older than 14. For an instant, Evan felt the weight of the awesome responsibility on his shoulders. This child, and her child, two lives in his hands. She took a shaky breath.
"For so long."
She trailed off. Evan waited.
"I feel like I've been stuck in my head and can't come out. You know, I can't make what it feels like inside match the outside world. It's like, you remember Osmosis from Bio?"
"Sure."
"It's like that. This constant pressure.
And now I've just made a mess of everything. And I don't know how to clean it up. I don't even feel strong enough to find out about this baby I'm responsible for.
All alone here in this room. Without Raimundo. And then I go back there to those armed men. To that place. It's all so much."
She was trembling, on the verge of coming apart. Evan said, "Bend your knees. Put the soles of your feet on the table and let your knees knock gently together." She looked at him, a rustle of paper as she obeyed. "Now point your arms straight up at the ceiling. Good. And then cross them so you hug yourself. Either arm on top, don't think about it." She did. "How does that feel?"
"Better," she said. "Like I'm, don't know, supported."
"Right. You're supporting yourself." "Like talking to my body?" "No," he said. "Letting your body talk to you. It's smarter than you. It's showing your nervous system that you're okay right now. In this moment. That you're safe." Her big eyes looked even bigger. She mouthed, "Thank you," and then closed them. For a time she just breathed, the hospital sounds forming a kind of white noise. When Dr. Ortega returned pushing a trolley, Angelina seemed calmer.
Got one early,
Ortega said. Patient died. A wink to Angelina. Lucky us. As soon as the stirrups came up, Evan backed away, giving them a wide berth. But Angelina said,
Will you? Can you hold my hand?
Evan gritted his teeth, moved closer to her. As Ortega snapped on latex gloves, he stood facing the other way, holding on Helena's hand, his back to the proceedings.
A little pressure now, the doc said, and on Helena's hand tensed in Evan's.
He had never been in a situation like this in his life. On Helena bucked now and again with discomfort, and then Evan heard Ortega snap off the gloves and stretch on new ones. The stirrups clanked back down, and Angelina lowered her legs.
Everything looks good, Ortega said. No abnormalities.
Some shortening of the cervix, but that's normal.
Should we take a peek at the baby now?
Holding her breath, Angelina gave a nod. Her palm was sweaty in Evan's, the seal tight. He risked a glance back as Ortega readied the conductive gel, warming it in her palm as she reached for the transducer. Back to Angelina, sweat sparkling at her hairline, face drawn with emotion.
Okay, Ortega said behind Evan. Looking good. See, that's the head there, and... Oh, an ear. And that... That's the heartbeat.
Tears were streaming down Angelina's temples, dotting the paper.
You can look, you know, Angelina told Evan in that smooth, low voice. It's just my belly and a monitor.
He turned cautiously. The lower part of her abdomen was exposed, the transducer gliding across it through translucent gel. The monitor, swung to face Angelina, showed a shifting charcoal cone of blobby shadows. Her fingers, still interlaced with his, tightened. The moment was elevated out of normal life somehow, imbued with a surreal glow that bordered on celestial. It was like being inside a Renaissance painting.
We can't always tell the gender at 12 weeks, Ortega said. Depends on the angle of the genital tubercle, but...
Oh, there it is. Do you want to know? A male heir was what the dark man desired. A baby boy would make him more likely to be lenient to Angelina and his own son. A baby boy would add a tactical advantage to the mission, and gaining tactical advantage was all Evan cared about. And yet, if Ortega confirmed the gender, the chief of staff would no doubt inform Montesco's men. If it was a girl, Angelina's plight would worsen. It would be better not to know than to risk the wrong outcome. And yet he couldn't bring himself to object. It seemed profane to interfere with this moment. Angelina hesitated. Tears kept streaming down the sides of her face. Wiping her nose, she nodded a few times quickly, like a little kid.
Yeah.
Dr. Ortega set down the transducer and did something Evan had thought her incapable of. She gave Angelina a soft, warm smile. Everything about her had transformed. All that steely confidence turned soft, maternal. Evan braced himself. Ortega said,
You're having a girl.
He felt the answer in his spine, the shuddering backstep after a landed punch. Angelina held a loose hand over her face and began to sob. And he understood that the news had hit her just as hard. Then she curled forward, still sobbing, and said in a hoarse whisper,
I never thought it could be so beautiful.
And Evan understood that he understood nothing at all. He stood stiffly and held her hand, and Ortega rested a loving hand on her leg. Then the phone at the doctor's hip vibrated. She glanced at a text and said, They need me in the ER.
I'll give you a moment alone and be back to check you out.
The gender, Evan said. Can we keep it between us? Hesitating on her way out, Ortega glanced at the ultrasound unit. I can't alter medical files. But I don't have to volunteer anything. The door thunked shut behind her. They heard her muffled exchange with Jovencito, demanding to know when they could leave, and then silence reasserted itself. Angelina smiled through her tears. "Listen," Evan said, pressing buttons on the computer to try to erase the imaging. "We have to tell Montesco it's a boy."
"Wait, I don't understand. Montesco only cares about a boy. You're just an incubator to him."
"But I'm having a girl. I saw her."
He tugged at the cords connected to the monitor. "Keep your voice down."
"Everything's different now," she said, squirming upright. "A baby girl. I saw her. She's real."
She was still crying, just tears, no sobbing.
"X, you have to get me and Raimundo away from him. You have to get us out of there."
He sensed it before he heard it, the click of the door opening. He turned to see Jovencito in the room, staring at them, revelation writ large upon his face. Jovencito grabbed for his gun. Chapter 42. The Fist of God. Evan kicked the trolley, which scooted across the floor, ramming into Jovencito's knees as he raised the Desert Eagle 44. The first shot shattered the computer, conveniently obliterating Angelina's medical files. The second trailed close enough to Evan's right cheek that he felt the heat from the round as he charged. Shoulder into Jovencito's solar plexus, driving him up into the door to slam it shut, knock the wind out of him, and maybe crack a floating rib. The pistol skittered off, disappearing beneath the cabinet. As Evan and the Sicario tumbled away, Evan slapped the lever lock on the door an instant before one of the henchmen hit the other side. Jovencito grabbed Evan around the midsection and hurled him across the nearest counter. He shattered through glass jars holding swabs and cotton balls, plowing into the far wall. Wedged at the end of the counter, he felt something pinch into his hip. A defibrillator. Lucky day. He swatted the bright orange button to charge it, the electronic whine increasing in intensity, not loud enough to drown out Angelina's cries from the bed. Jovencito snatched up a graduated syringe rolling on the countertop and came at Evan. Evan caught the base of Jovencito's hand, stopping the needle tip inches from his eye, and smashed Jovencito's fist into the wall. The syringe shattered inside Jovencito's palm, and he howled. He opened his fist, his palm studded with shards, and drew it back to swipe across Evan's face. Evan kicked him off just in time, heel to his chest to knock him over. Evan rolled off the counter, bringing a rainfall of wreckage with him and catching a Dutch angle glance at a panicky Angelina yanking on her clothes. The defibrillator slid off the counter after him, knocking his shoulder and falling to the tile between him and Jovencito. Charged and ready, it emitted a steady tone. They lunged for it at the same time. They grabbed it from opposite sides and tumbled apart again, Evan coming away with the paddles, Jovencito with the toaster-sized base. They stared at each other, connected by two thick spiral cords suited to old-fashioned telephones. Both parts of the unit had their own set of controls. Evan lunged forward to crash the paddles onto either side of Jovencito's head, but Jovencito caught his forearms, keeping them barely at bay. Evan reared back, ready to shove them forward, but Jovencito kicked the base, discharging it. A spark crackled between the paddles, spending the charge an instant before Evan got them to Jovencito's face. Straining, nose to nose, sprawled out on the floor, kicking for purchase among the shards of glass. The henchman's pounding at the solid door was joined by the shouts of doctors. Sweat popping on his face, Jovencito found time to smile at Evan before flinging him into a cabinet beneath the window. Younger and stronger indeed. Behind Jovencito, Angelina detached one of the metal stirrups from the exam table, but Evan shook his head at her. The last thing he needed was a pregnant woman entering the fray. Rolling onto his side, Jovencito smacked the button on the defib base to charge again. Evan fumbled open the cabinet door behind him, implements clattering down over his shoulder. Scalpels. He snatched one up. Jovencito got a foot beneath him in a low crouch and dove at Evan with the paddles. His body stretched horizontal a few feet above the floor. Evan brought his fist around in time for Jovencito to impale himself on the scalpel. But Jovencito had aimed well at Evan's exposed flesh. One paddle shoved into the side of Evan's neck, the other high on his biceps beneath a hiked-up sleeve. Jovencito's thumb clamped down over the orange button. The shock was unlike anything Evan had felt before. A massive blow going straight through him, like the fist of God driving a clean channel through his torso. The force knocked him across the floor, racking him into the wall, his entire left side seized up, muscles contracted excruciatingly. An acrid reek of burned flesh, a black wisp curling past the edge of his eye, the skin sizzling at the side of his neck as if someone had pressed an iron into